I don't know if I'll ever get to a point where I'm like, I'm done. I want to go sit Mai Tais on the beach and just chill for the next forever. Like, no, like, because I feel like that's in some senses, you're like wasting the gift that God has, all the gifts that God has given you to go out and to produce and to create and to give of your life and of your energy to the people around you, to, like you said, to make them feel certain ways, to make them feel uplifted and motivated, inspired to go and do and build so we can all grow together. We can all rise together. You know, like I don't think I could ever stop. Welcome to the Rising Tribe. I'm Jared.
And I'm Austin.
And our goal is to inspire young men to build strong families and discover their potential as men, husbands, and fathers.
And we'll do this by having authentic conversations about faith, family, health, and business as we strive to level up our lives and the lives around us. So, welcome everybody to March episode version 2.0. And we are working through technical difficulties like champs. So that's a big win for us. I mean, it's something you mentioned them before, man, is like every time we do this, we have something come up, but I'm happy that we figure it out. That's just part of life. It's like the idea with, have you ever been in traffic and just got mad at the traffic? And it's like, well, it's a good lesson. Like, there's nothing I can do about this. Right. I'm just going to try to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like all the people around you were necessarily the problem either. Like, everyone's in the same boat. Everyone just is starting to get mad at each other just because.
But, we were talking about there are burpees before we restarted, but I think it's worth bringing that up about how I got you roped into doing 50,000 burpees.
I'll set the stage real quick before you go in and explain to everyone how you wrote me into this thing. So back at the beginning of the new year, and I know we've talked about this here on the show before, but at the beginning of the new year, Spartan Races, they came out on Instagram and put out this challenge and said, if you do 300 burpees every day for a week, or 10 miles run, or a 20 mile air bike ride, then you will get some sort of prize. And so Austin did this. He did the, I think he did 300 burpees most of the time. And then I think he did a run once, or maybe a bike once or twice. But he did this kind of thinking he was going to get like a free sweatshirt, or, you know, like a cool hat or something. Like, that's it. But instead you got an email.
I got an email from them that said you get free tickets for an entire event for anybody. And we're going to do a Tough Mudder out here in Atlanta. I've recruited like my whole company, friends from church, my gym, et cetera, to do it for free. Then I got a ticket to go up to Joe DeSena's house this summer. So I get to go hang out with him. I think we're doing a 24-hour
ultra. And Joe DeSena's he's the CEO of Spartan.
He is. Yeah, so he's a CEO of Spartan. And then he's a freak, man. He's done like Goggins level stuff. I just haven't written a book about him. And then as far as the last one, it was like, hey, you can race in their Sparta race in Greece. So I'm like, done, I'll do it. But in order to qualify for that, I needed to have completed a trifecta weekend, which is doing the 21K, the 10K, and the 5K all in one weekend, which last year I did it throughout the course of a year. But I did it in the course of a weekend last weekend. I'm like broken. I've got blisters, bruises. I couldn't walk for 2 days, but I got Jared roped into this burpee, so I've still been having to move every day.
I didn't realize also that that the championship race in Sparta was the three individual. There was that you could do any of the three individual events or do them all together. I thought it was just one singular race. So all of this came out in the course of a couple of hours that day. When we were texting back and forth. So
we're doing all three of them together now.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. Because what else are you going to do? You're just going to go all the way out to Greece to run the 5K?
No.
Call yourself?
No.
So, oh my gosh. So Austin, he and I are texting back and forth. He's like, dude, I bet you I could email these guys and ask them if they would let you run this race with me. And I'll just tell them that you can't do the weekend trifecta because you're stationed in Italy, et cetera. I'm sure they'd be fine with it. And I was like, all right, dude, send it. Like, send the email. There's the worst that could happen is they say no, right? So Austin sends this email to them, and it's like it's a long email because you're also talking about getting some people into a race, and then you put in there, oh, and by the way, I have a friend who do this podcast with, and I'd really like, or he'd really like to do this race with me, but he can't complete the trifecta in a weekend because he's stationed in Italy for the Air Force and isn't going to be able to do that. You know, could you make an exception? And so what does he respond with?
We will make an exception, period. That's all he responds. Aja, can you please help? That's it. And so I explained before in the previous email, I said, he assured me he would do whatever you asked of him to earn or be able to race in Sparta with me. He doesn't just want to have it handed to him, basically. And so I responded after, I said, thanks, I appreciate that a ton. He told me he'd be willing to do 300 burpees a day for a week if you need him to earn it that way. Regardless, thank you. And I just said, I've included Jared in the email thread, so just let him know what he needs to do or for any information. And Dan, his chief of staff for Spartan, responds and just casually says, hey, how about instead of 300 a day for a week, join me for the remainder of the year in my burpees every day for 2024. I did 110 in January, 120 in February, and doing 130 a day in March, adding 10 each month all the way to December. Would be cool to see a group from Italy doing burpees to help you earn your way to Greece. So, Jared, what was going through your head when you got that email?
Dude, here's what's going through my head. You sent me the screenshot that said, like, we'll make an exception. I was like, dude, this is it. Like, I can't believe they're going to do this. Like, this is so exciting. And then I see you, I'm like at work. And so I'm, you know, doing stuff at work and I'm checking my email every now and then. And I check my email and I have the message where you CC'd me in it saying, like, he's willing to do the 300 burpees every day. I was like, dude, wait a minute. He already said he was going to make an exception. You don't got to go tell him to do more. So that's what I was laughing about. And then I think because of the time difference, he might've gone to bed or whatever. And so then it was a few hours and then he responded with the, how about you do join me with the challenge and we'll do 130 burpees a day for the rest of March and then 140 in April and et cetera. And I was losing my mind. I was telling the guys at the office, I was like, I have no idea what I just signed myself up for. But then I started doing the math. I'm the pull up a spreadsheet. I'm like, oh my gosh, dude, from March 19th to the end of the year, it'll be 50,440 burpees. And if we had started at the beginning of the year, so Dan, who did start at the beginning of the year, he will have done over 60,000 by the end of the year. So, I mean, at least we got out of the first 10,000 burpees, but we've got just under 50,000 left.
Well, you got to recruit your office, like you got to recruit your guys out in Italy to do it with you.
Yeah. So far, everyone I've talked to has like walked out of my office when I brought it up. They said no, thank you, at the hell left. Yeah. So we're still on the hunt for new recruits.
I picked up a couple guys in the door-to-door world. One right yesterday, on, just emailed, one messaged me yesterday. It was like, done tomorrow morning. So his name's Adam Clark. So he awesome. Just hopped on the train. So
to everyone listening, so we created a little group in Instagram where we can just all put in there, you know, I'm done for the day, and a little check mark or something, just to keep us accountable. Because, like, dude, like these things are tough. Like, doing any sort of big challenge is going to be a hard thing as it is. But doing it with somebody else, like that's where the magic happens. That's where, one, you're going to have far higher likelihood of actually accomplishing whatever it is you set out to do, and two, like, it's going to make it way more fun. I was thinking about this because Marisha sent me down, my wife, and she was like, because I asked her, I was like, dude, do you think I'm crazy? And she looked at me. She's like, actually, I'm a little bit worried. And she was like dead serious. And she's like, and here's why, because you've talked about all these fitness goals, these mobility goals, stretching, flexibility, blah, 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 that you want to do. And like, you just purchased a couple of programs in order to help you kind of like, you know, refine your path along the way. And here you are, like, totally, it seems like you might be derailing all of that. So you can now do this thing in Greece that you've never talked about really doing at all before, like the last couple of weeks. And I just want to make sure that this is actually in line with the goals that you've set up, and you're not just jumping on the next shiny object that's out there. And so I was talking about it with her and whatnot, and just realizing, like, this is kind of crazy. And one of the things she asked me, she was like, if you knew that you were actually going to be, oh, and here's one of the crazy things. So this, I didn't know until we went back and forth on those emails, is that the race in Sparta, I was just assuming it was just some Spartan race, like out there in Greece, like that it was, maybe it was a 10K, maybe it was a 20K or something, but like, it was just going to be a race out there. Turns out they have all three races. So it's the, what is it called? The sprint, the super, no, the sprint, the beast, and the, what are they called?
So sprint's the 5, super's the 10, and the beast is the 21K.
Okay. So you can do each one of those individually, or you can do all three of them at once. And so Austin, so the girl emailed us back and she's like, which race are you guys trying to sign up for? I'll be sure to flag your accounts in Spartan Race, blah, blah, blah. And I texted Austin. I was like, dude, we're doing all three, right? He's like, yeah, we're doing all three the same day. Yeah. I was like, all right. And I started doing the math. I'm like, yo, that's like almost a whole marathon plus all of the obstacles along the way. Like, I'm not in that kind of shape, dude. And so I was talking to my wife. She's like, if you had known all of this beforehand, would you have signed up for this? And I was like, I think I would, but I would not. Maybe I didn't tell this to her in a conversation, but if I was doing this by myself, I wouldn't have signed up.
Like, yeah, no way. No way.
Not a chance. Because, I mean, where's the fun in that? Like, where are the memories in that? Because here's one of the things I think about. I can't remember. There's a book. Somebody wrote a book somewhere at some point in time talking about the dividends that memories pay out to us, right? We talk about investments. You invest in a stock and then it pays you dividends. It pays you a little bit of money every month, every quarter, every year, et cetera. Well, memories, so activities that we do, the reason like events or memories can be so strong, so powerful is that we can relish that memory for years and years to come. Like every time you think about it and you get to relive a small portion of that memory, obviously not in as vivid detail as the day that you did it, but you get to cherish that. You get to have some of those emotions and those feelings again. And it's nowhere near as powerful if it's just a memory of just you doing this one thing by yourself. Like if I, that 50 mile ultra that I ran a couple of years ago, I would not have finished that if I was by myself. Not a chance. I needed Julia to help push me along the way. And for several miles. And then there was a point in time where she said, I cannot finish this, or I could not finish this if I was by myself. And that was my chance to help carry her for the last little bit of the race. And so thinking about this, dude, first off, we've got many months of training to do, thousands and thousands and thousands of burpees that we're going to be doing along the way. But one, it's going to increase our contact, like you and me, even though we talk all the time, is going to increase the amount of contact that we have with each other. Like just one more touch point every single day, one reminder that there's somebody else out there pursuing hard goals, big goals with us. They got our back and we are a team and we are helping each other. We're getting a group of guys together to do this, to push each other and to create a little bit of a tribe of a community. And then also, dude, the adventure of like that week when we fly out to Sparta, when we run the race, like the races, all three of them, dude, it's going to be nuts. And we're going to be exhausted and in pain and we're going to be hurting and we're going to be covered in mud and we're going to be like limping to the end, maybe. But then it's going to be like that's going to be such a strong memory that we will have for the rest of our lives. How cool is that, dude? Like, that's amazing. It's so insane. It's going to be awesome. I'm so excited.
Dude, I think of it, and I think we had mentioned this in the previous recording, but the guy that I've kind of taken after a lot as of recently is Jesse Itzler. He's a guy that did Hell on the Hill. We talked about that last year and Running Man. And dude, I know we always sound so cliche, but we're not really promised tomorrow. So it's like, it's really good to do what's called a Masoji every year, which is something that is just so out of the ordinary that you would have never done, but it's a big event. And like you said, events bring way bigger returns because you can relive them. There's something that like time can't take that away from you. And so Greece this year is my big Masoji. I promised my wife that me and you would not go to Santorini because that's like more romantic and my wife wants to go there. I'm like, cool, we won't go to Santorini. plus I don't know if I want to go to Santorini with a dude. I went to you might have met Trent Reinecke briefly, but Trent and I went to Paris. I think it was my sophomore year of college, and we're standing out at the Eiffel Tower, and there's just all these couples like eating wine and cheese, and they have the VN Rose playing, and then I'm just standing there next to my dude friend, and I'm like, dude, this is like not our place. Like all these couples are in love, and I'm just like, why? I need a girlfriend right now. I don't need a dude. So I don't know if that makes sense, but basically, I told Kaya, not going to go to Santorini. I think you mentioned the same thing. Kaya and I were just talking about, it's just not going to make that much sense to bring a almost three-year-old for both of us, a newborn baby for both of us, and women like pregnant wives. It's just not going to make sense. Right. So we'll have way more fun if we just go out race. I'll probably chill with y'all for a little bit out in Italy and then go back home.
Right.
So it's going to be fun, dude.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. This is going to be so much fun.
Dude, there's a couple days I didn't want to do the burpees, but I'm like, I got to get it done. Like, I committed to doing this with Jared.
One thing that I think this presents a really cool opportunity for us is what I was talking to my wife about, and that was that one of the things I put on in my binder for the year is that I want to work on being the kind of person who says what they or that does what they say they're going to do, and that's a mantra that I'm working on because I feel like I do it a lot of the time, but not all of the time, and I want to go from that 75-80% to 100%. Of, I do what I say I'm going to do. And I told you, I told you who then told Dan that, that I was willing to do whatever they asked me to do in order to make this happen, in order to run this race. Cause I mean, incredible opportunity. They're being very generous in this aspect by extending the exception to policy to let me go and race. And so if they say like, okay, well, this is what you need to do in order to get there. Like, what am I going to do? Say, you know what? I said I was willing to do anything, but actually that's my threshold. Like, maybe I could do 100 burpees a day, 130. No, that's too high. Like, not willing to do it. Like, no, I said I'm going to do this. And no, I don't want to be crazy and that like, I'm going to kill myself in the process, but like, I'm going to do it because I said I'm going to do it. And this is exactly the kind of practice that I need to become the kind of person that I want to become. Like, I need to practice saying that I'm going to do something and then do it. And so every single day I have this opportunity, every single day I face it. You know, I said I was going to do this many burpees. Am I going to do it? Yes or no? And then I can do it. And it's a 100% completion or 100% failure every day. And so every day I'm building a little bit of evidence that this is true, that the statement that I do what I say I'm going to do is a true statement. And so I'm, maybe in other aspects of my life, I might fail on that. I may not do what I said I was going to do. I might forget. I might not set up a good reminder system or whatever. But in this one aspect, it is quite easy to say, I completed this, I did it, or I didn't do it. And so I am like, this is exactly in service of this thing at the beginning of the year that I said I was going to do. And now kind of pivot, we set up these vision binders of what we want to accomplish, what we want to become, who we want to become over the course of this year. And lo and behold, dude, this opportunity presents itself to us. And now we get the chance to see it through this lens of, is this big, hairy, audacious goal, is this, what'd you call it, misogy? If this event, like, if this is going to happen, like, this is exactly in service of that thing. Let's jump on it. Let's take advantage of it.
Yeah, what's crazy with this is, man, like, a lot of people think that I'm crazy or me and you are crazy. But if you actually think about the time that is required to do this, like once you start, you said it's taking you about 20 minutes right now, but once you start moving and getting more efficient on the actual movement itself, there's tips I can show you too that'll make it faster.
Right.
For example, like my feet are super wide when I do these and my jump, like when I jump, my chest is already falling down on the ground. Like I'm just letting gravity pull me down to the ground. It's not like, it doesn't look like pretty.
Right.
But long story short, like it only has taken me 13 minutes now to knock out. I'm like, okay, cool. Like I've spent 40 minutes on my phone today. Why can't I take 13 of those and put it towards a cause, which, we'll dedicate this toward cause. If it's just to earn your way to Greece, like that's a great cause too. Like just getting guys together, getting them disciplined. But I'm connected to a guy from Lionhearts. And I think we might try to team up with them to just try to raise awareness. They help underprivileged kids that they don't have a whole lot. So I'll find out more on that. But
dude,
there's cool things that we can. I mean, it's just such a cool thing to do because now we are connected with Dan, who's the CEO of Chief.
He's the chief of staff.
Chief of staff, right? Of Spartan. So like, just the idea of, hey, we did burpees every day with this guy for a year. He's automatically in our circle and we have a cool person that's a friend now, which is so cool. Like I messaged him last night, I messaged him like, hey, are you good? Did you get yours done? He goes, yep, got it done. So like, That's so cool. Like,
yeah.
And
yeah.
we're when he, you're with he, people he that are doing big hard things.
He commented on one of my posts because I was home. I didn't go to work that day, and I was doing my burpees at home. My daughter's like running between my legs, and it took me way longer to do them because she's like right there. She kept trying to like run under. I'm almost like, you know, knocking her out as I'm trying to do my burpees. So I took a picture with her and posted it. And Dan texted me, and he's like, this is awesome, getting the whole family involved. And I was like yeah, actually, and this is something I want to develop. I want my children to see. That taking care of my body is an important thing. Getting strong and doing hard things is an important thing to me. So today, dude, the video I posted was my daughter. So freaking funny, dude. I come downstairs and she's eating breakfast, and she like finishes eating and she like pats her tummy and she goes, belly hop. And I was like, do you want to,
is that what she calls them?
Burpees with me? Yeah. And she was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so we go in the other room and I set up the yoga mat, and she just like lays down on it, and then she gets up, and then she like jumps. And I was like, dude, this is awesome. So I took a video of it, and she did it several times. And after like two burpees, she like lays on the ground, and then she like rolls over and sticks one of her arms up, and she's like, help, help, help. And so I pick her up, and she hops, and then she lays back down, and she wants me to pick her back up. So it's a great.
Dude, it's cool to see you do that with your daughter. Like, it's good to see our kids. It's good to have our kids see us working out, moving our bodies. It's just a way of us, it's the way how we live, you know? And so that's something with our home gym recently. My daughter sees me lifting weights every day. And she knows that when she wakes up, she looks over at mom and goes, Daddy working out? And yeah, I'm working out. So they come downstairs usually, and they see me finishing up my lift. Yeah. But, dude, a lot of people have joined us. So, like, you can recruit your office. I've recruited a couple guys in the door-to-door world. One of the guys from church is doing them every day with you and I. So, it's like we have a good crew of men. Like, they're working together on this. And I think it's just exciting, man. That's a big thing that we get to look forward to every day. And it actually makes me excited to wake up, because every day I'm like, oh, I've got to clock in. Technically, like, I'm doing it with you because we're part of a team, right? But like,
right.
That's what I got to do to help you and help everybody that we're with to hit our goals together. It's like, cool, I'm going to do that. And there's a payout at the very beginning of November. So it's cool because you like, there's constantly on your mind. There's like, hey, I have this carrot hanging in front of me. So I get excited every day.
Right.
Just to wake up. So it's, that's a big, big thing. So if you guys are interested in doing this with us, either message our Instagram page, which we started last month. I'm running that. It's my job. And so I'll get better about posting more reels from our episodes. So like, message us on the Rising Tribe podcast, or message Jared and I personally, and we'll add you to the Burpee Challenge group chat on Instagram, where every day just add in a check mark like, hey, I did it. And we'll hold you accountable. Like, one kid on there was like from our mission, Elder Solis, he was like, hey, I don't do my burpees on Sunday. I'm like, cool, do 260 on Monday and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Or just put them out over the other 6 days, you know?
Yeah. It's like an extra
20 or so burpees every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's so awesome. That's Solis lives in Argentina and I live in Italy.
Oh, yeah.
You're in Utah and I think Dan's in Florida. So like, everyone's all over the world just saying, hey, yeah, I did this thing.
Florida, Georgia, Italy, Utah, and Argentina
Yeah.
Isn't that so cool? Like, all over the world, burpees are being done.
Yeah. Awesome, dude. It's so awesome. So I want to transition into the event. I can't remember what it's called, but you went and saw In My Leg. We actually recorded the last episode the night before you went and saw him. So tell me about it. How was it?
Yeah. So, really cool conference called Life Surge. And Nick Vujicic, he's like one of the, I hope I said his name right, but he's one of the main speakers for that event. He's an Australian guy, born without arms and legs, has become a huge evangelist and like shared the gospel with millions of people over the world. So he's a really incredible guy. But at this particular one, we got to hear Sally Robertson. Kaya was excited to hear her speak. She's Willie Robertson's daughter from Duck Dynasty. But we got to hear Jonathan Romy speak. He's the Jesus actor from The Chosen. And Kaya and I the whole time were like, hey, we're going to meet Jesus tomorrow. Like, excited. And then afterwards, we're like, hey, I met Jesus. Like, kind of just funny. But But the main reason we went was because I really wanted to see Ed Milet speak in person. And it was only like $260 to get like the big package ticket where I got to go shake his hand, meet him in person, and take a picture with him. Those are so quick. They make sure you don't bring anything in your pockets. And so I had handwritten him a thank you card. So I was like, there's no way I'm not giving this to him. So I put it in my back pocket, pulled my shirt over my back pocket so they couldn't see it. And I shook his hand, said thank you. And that is how quick the interaction was. But he just looked me in the eyes and said, thanks, I'll read it on the airplane, appreciate it. So, but then it was picture gone. So it was really quick. But just getting to shake his hand has always been a goal of mine. And the ladies that were running the booth took the thank you card from me. And I asked them later, I'm like, did he actually get it or did you throw it away? And they're like, no, he got it. So I'm like, okay, cool, mission accomplished. Awesome. So he's one of the people that's had a huge impact on my life from afar, right? Jesse Itzler and Ed Milet are some of the two biggest like mentors I look up to in the self-help world and the business world. And dude, getting to hear him speak was so incredible because he shared a lot about his dad. And I was a mess the entire time, just about, you know, his dad died from cancer and so did mine. So it's like tough to hear, but it also was like really healing to be able to connect with somebody, even though he's speaking in front of hundreds of people, man, like, I feel like this guy's talking to me, right? But really interestingly enough with him, when he started his speech, the lights, the power was already out. So like the power was out and he gave the first like 15 minutes of his speech pitch black. No, like very little microphone power because there was no power in that part of Atlanta at the time. It was really special to see how he handled it. It was one of the coolest things. And the lights came back on like halfway through his speech and he got you know, the stories going with the slideshow, pictures. But the two main themes with him were like probably the biggest theme were like, who do you want to be when you have one more day on this world, on this earth? And how, yeah, like life is kind of sacred and precious and delicate. We don't know when we're going to die. And he talks a lot about being the one, like being the one to change your family tree forever. And right. me and you talk very openly about how we are the ones in our family line. Like, I love a couple episodes ago, you talked about how your dad set the stage for you to be able to be the one. Like your dad broke a lot of bad trends in his family line and he set you guys up. Right. You know, like maybe he didn't finish the race, maybe he didn't finish the race the way he could have. But the thing is, it's like he set you and your family up. And so now you are going to be the one who does crazy things in your life and makes a huge impact. And right. So, dude, like that got me really, like that hit me really hard because like after he had spoken, like I was crying. Like it was tough, like, because it wasn't like I was sad. I was like inspired and Kaya looked at me and she goes, hey, you know, like, she goes, it's kind of funny. I think about Grandpa John when I hear his speech about being the one to kind of change those generational curses, I guess. Right. And her grandpa came from a home where the dad was extremely abusive, but her grandpa John broke that chain and started. He was still a character, right? He wasn't an angel. I mean, there's times where Grandpa John, I love him to death. There were times where Grandpa John would look to his wife and be like, "Hey, you look like a whale." So there's definitely like he wasn't an angel, man. Like he was definitely a really hardcore like New Yorker, like very you know how New Yorkers are, New Jersey New Yorkers. Right. He broke that generational like curse of like abuse and everything. And now look at his family now. They've got all these amazing grandkids. I got to marry his granddaughter Kaya, and him and I became like really good friends before he died. I would just sit in his living room and listen to him tell stories. And we were buddies, man. So,
dude, that's awesome.
But anyways, Kaya looked at me and she goes, hey, like John was the one that changed our family history. And she's like, you're going to be the one for our family that does that for your side of the family. And I believe it. I mean, I think that, you know, I joke with my mom all the time, like, hey, I'm going to retire you. Like, and you're going to get a 401S instead of a 401K. She's got a 401 son. But, like, I'm serious when I say that, so yeah. Those sort of things. Like, it's fun because my mom supports me 100%. But it's cool, man. When Kaya said that, I was just like overwhelmed with emotion. I'm like, it wasn't sad. It was just like, holy crap. Like, yeah, I'm the one for my family. So right. It's been really exciting. It was really exciting to meet him in person, and by far the best public speaker I've ever listened to in my life. It's different when you go to an event and you hear them speak. It is so much different than listening to an audiobook or a podcast. You can feel the energy they're giving off and the intensity, or the when they lower their voice, when they get more soft, like you feel that whole thing. And it was one of the coolest experiences getting in here. That was the third time I've heard him speak. But that was my favorite. That was my favorite speech that I've ever heard him give.
Awesome, dude. That's so awesome. And you got me thinking, you know, people might say like, well, that's pretty arrogant of you, you know, of us to say that, like, well, I'm the one that's going to change my family history, you know, forever. I am the chosen one. But thinking about that, like, well, what are you believing? What are you telling yourself if you don't believe that you are the one? You're like, well, I'm actually not the one who's going to come along and radically change the course of my family's trajectory forever. Like, I'm not the one. Like, what, how does that help you? Like, does that help you in any way, shape, or form? No, not at all. And that's something Ed Milet talks about. Is, you know, does this belief that whatever this victimhood of certain circumstances or something that happened to you, like it could all be true, but does it help you? Like, does it help you get to where you'd like to be? And most of the time when we play those games, it's not helping us. It's actually holding us back. It's preventing us from getting to where we would like to be, to become like the people that we're looking at saying, that's who I actually want to be like. And so, to believe that you could be the one to change the course of your family's history, like that is what calls us forward. That is the goal, is to be that one. And I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy there. That it is that you, by believing that you are one who could change all of these things about your family and push them forward into the next, you know, the next level of family, if you will, then you will start to do those things and you will become more motivated and you will take more actions that will create the evidence that supports that belief until it really truly is the truth. And I think there's no other way that we ought to live. Like, it doesn't mean that everybody needs to do these crazy radical things. Does everyone need to go out and, you know, earn millions upon millions of dollars in doing all sorts of like speeches and keynotes and all this? No, that isn't what that means. But if you look at the course of your family, and you, if there are things in there that you see that you don't like, then that is an opportunity for you to become the one to put you and your family and your children and your grandchildren on a trajectory forward. And that is that opportunity for you. And I fully want to seize that opportunity. Like, it feels to me like a waste of my dad's life in some sense, that he endured all of this hardship and abuse and the all of the terrible things that happened to him and his family, you know, when his mom died when he was little, and his dad married his stepmom who's, you know, wicked and abusive and has all sorts of brothers who do all sorts of terrible things to the kids. And they come over here to the States. They go to Compton in California. He goes to high school. Like, my dad's the only one from his family to graduate high school. He's the only one from his family to go to college. And then he gets a degree. He ends up getting his doctorate. And like, he has a family. He has the house. He has the car. Like, he's created this life. And he has shielded us from all of these terrible things that have happened in the past. It feels like a waste of all of that energy and all of that effort and all of those blessings that God gave him. It feels like a waste of that for us to not then propel ourselves into the next, into the next level of a future. And yes, in a lot of ways, my dad squandered so much of that. There was a lot of pain and a lot of tears and a lot of heartache all along that way. I don't want to discount any of that. But for me, as his son, it gives it like all that I have to deal with here is to take that and to go forward. To take, to use that as a starting point and then to go forward and not to sit and relive and rehash that past, because that is not going to be helpful whatsoever to getting me and my family, my wife, my daughters to where I want to be in the future.
You found purpose in it. And I think, I've talked about this before. My dad always used to say everything happens for a reason. Like, yes, I agree. I also think that sometimes you can't necessarily find a reason. Like, this was the reason that this happened, but you have found purpose in the things that have happened so that it serves you moving forward.
Right.
That's huge. And you're going to have a huge impact on your family. I think we talk a lot about like financial stuff in this podcast too, about like setting yourself up well financially. I mean, you have like entrepreneur goals, but also just being a good man. Being somebody who takes care of their family and puts their family in a good position to be protected, to be taken care of. And I feel like it's good for me to, for both of us, because I feel like we're both on the same wavelength there. We want our families to have great lives, to have good memories, to learn good lessons. And, aside from that, to follow, I think for me, and this is Jeremy, one of the biggest takeaways I took from Jeremy when we had him on our podcast was just helping our kids to get back to Heavenly Father. Like, that's...
Yeah,
that's like the ultimate goal there, is to help them live a life that actually means something with an eternal perspective too. Like, it was a cool thing, and it's really cool how much that message resonates with me and with you, even though we both have different circumstances. Like, everybody can be the one to change their family, and it is empowering. Like, it really is empowering. I left that feeling extremely empowered. They also gave us tools to use to build wealth so that we could better benefit the kingdom of God. Like, I 100% believe that our purpose here on the earth is to, raise our families, to follow God, but also, like, when God blesses us with wealth and prosperity, like, we ought to remember that that was always God's anyways. Like, that's not ours. Granted, we're commanded to give 10% of whatever we're blessed with to God, but in my mind, the other 90% is still God. He's entrusted me to be a good steward of that
90%. Right.
But to that point, I'm just going to share this because it's coming to mind. But I have a really good buddy right now who's struggling financially, and I don't need to say names or anything. But I was talking to him the other day. And I'm like, dude, like, you are one of the most giving people I know. And even when you're in these hard times where you don't have a whole lot, you're still giving of your time, your resources, of your energy. And so if God knows that you're willing to give when you don't have a whole lot right now, you're the type of person that God's going to bless, because he knows that you can give whenever. A lot of people think that they'll give once they have, but that's not true. The way you know if you're going to give is if you give when you don't have. That's something that came to my mind when I was at this conference too. Like, God's going to bless you exponentially as long as you have the right desires in your heart to impact his children. If you're doing it for selfish reasons, I'm sure there's ways to get really rich and really wealthy. But for what, right? Like, what's the point if you're not helping people along the way to have the same change and impact? So, like, at LifeSurge, I talk about trading real estate, and one of the things I heard from real estate, which is something I've bought into hook, line, and sinker recently, is do not delay. Just go, make moves, because the best time to invest in real estate is now. So, like, us buying a new house is super exciting because we bought a new real estate property. But
yeah,
like, we want to use that to be able to bless other lives, like, to give people a place to live, like, and to, because there are people that we will be able to bless down the road because we have that set up. So, I don't know. It just was a really cool thing. And I love that it was like, it was all based on, hey, how do we grow our wealth so that we can give back to the kingdom of God? That was awesome.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. So I love the law of tithing, because it is a percentage of your income. It is a percentage of your what you earn, of what you've gained. And it's not a number, because it's not a number. It's not a quantity that matters to God. He doesn't care if you have donated $1 million, if you've donated $10, if you've given 10 cents. What he cares about is that you have given a percentage of what you have to him as a reminder to yourself, really, that you know that he is the owner of it all. And like you said, that we are just stewards of it. And I think I shared this on the podcast a while back, but we also donate for fast offerings, which is that you donate of what it would cost you to eat a couple meals. You donate that money to help with the welfare of lots of people in your local area or in just around the world. And then of course there's other ways to donate, like through our church. You can donate to help missionaries go on missions, or just humanitarian aid in general, because the church donates a lot of money to humanitarian aid around the world. And a while back, shortly after Mercy and I got married, we had a conversation, now that we had combined finances, of how much we were going to give in our fast offerings and in just kind of like in general donations if we wanted to donate. And I was like, I don't remember the dollar amount, but I was like, I was thinking, you know, maybe this is about how much. So maybe, I don't know, we'll call it like $40. I'm like, oh, okay, we'll donate $40. Like, that's about two meals. Like, that should be good. And then my wife kind of like quietly like took that in and then said, well, actually, my whole life I've given, my whole adult life, I've chosen to give a percentage of my income as my fast offerings, because I want that continual reminder that as I increase in what I have, or what I'm a steward of, I should also increase in what I'm giving to others. Because what, you know, that our church says that you should give a generous fast offering, just whatever that means. It just says generous. So is generous like an extra $5, an extra $10, an extra $100? Like, what, you know, what does generous mean? And that's, I think there's a reason it's not specified. It is up to you in your relationship with God to decide what you truly believe to be generous. And I was reading in Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis, and in there he talks about how donations and offerings should be so much that it hurts a little bit. And that's how you know it's a sacrifice, is it's actually hurting you to give it up. And doesn't mean you should give 100% of everything you have. No, because then there won't be a you tomorrow to give as well. Like, once you've given it all up, like, you're out. But it should be a lot, or a lot more than you probably think it is. And so my wife and I talked about it, and we agreed on a number. And dude, it took a little while for me to get comfortable with it. I was like, dude, that is so much money. Like, you know, all the things we could buy with that, all the things we could do, the fun we could have, the food we could eat, blah, 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 blah. But that's just it, man. That's just it, is that as we've been blessed tremendously, and as we continue to be blessed, as income continues to grow, both, you know, inside of the military, as well as side hustles and other projects that start to generate income, it's a reminder. Like, it is an anchor to the earth. It is an anchor to our Heavenly Father that, you know, that all these blessings, no matter where they come from, or no matter where these opportunities originate from, it is a reminder to us that He is the origin of it all. And that everything that we have, He is just letting us use it. We are just stewards of it, and it's up to us to be good stewards. And so, like my wife and I were talking, you know, as our, you know, as certain milestones we hit in life, we want to increase that percentage of what we're donating and what we're giving as an extra reminder that we can do more, and that we can give more, and that we're going to be just fine. Like, and that's one of the coolest things I've come to realize, dude, we're doing just fine. Like, we are just fine. We are giving more and more and more, and we are doing just fine. Because like you said, we're not going to wake up someday when we're rich and then say, okay, now it is time to give, because our hearts will be different. When we get there, our hearts will be so much harder. It'll be so much more difficult for us, so much more painful for us to part with those larger quantities of money. So we have to start now in order to keep that soft and tender heart, so that when we are stewards of even more resources, that we can continue to give generously to everyone around us.
Yeah, give until it hurts. I actually just picked up Mere Christianity 2 days ago. I was in Deseret Book. I'm like, I'm going to read this. I've been listening to it in Spanish over the last little while. But C.S. Lewis was such a profound writer. One of my favorite books with him is Screwtape Letters.
Oh, that's great, dude. It's really good.
Really good. And then the other book that's similar kind of vibes is Napoleon Hill's Outwitting the Devil. So like Napoleon Hill.
I haven't read that
one yet. Oh, dude, it's better than Screwtape Letters. But really? it's basically an interview with the devil, and the devil is sworn into honesty, like he has to tell his secrets on how he fools men. And so Napoleon Hill fasted for a ton of time before he wrote this thing, but he has an interview with the devil, and the devil reveals all of his secrets, and he's left kind of looking like, he has no more secrets. Like it's amazing how he can kind of fool us into like falling down that path. And the Book of Mormon talks about Satan doesn't just trick us like with one big lie. It's usually little tiny threads that wrap around and they end up binding us. That's why I love C.S. Lewis books. I love Outwitting the Devil. But dude, it's so cool that you mentioned that. It is really true. We will give, I think God will give to us, God will bless us with more as we continue to bless more lives. And the ultimate end goal for me, dude, is to like build up enough residual income in these rental properties and be able to legit just retire, go on a mission with my wife. Like,
right.
I ain't bringing anything with me, brother. When I die, I die, man. Like, you're not bringing anything with you.
Right.
We did, Kaya and I just got our whole estate planned, like trust and everything planned. So when I do die, it's all figured out. But like,
right.
It's like when you're dead, it doesn't even matter. You're gone. Like your stuff does right. not matter. So weird, but it's like you the things that do stay behind, and Ed Milet talked about this, is like the way you made people feel and the impact you had on other people, that's what stays. But
right.
when my dad died, he left behind a large sum of money, but he was gone.
Yeah.
All I had from him was that, like my memories with dad and the lessons I learned from him. So
it's actually my older brother just texted me. He's reading this book about how the population growth in the United States has affected the growth of the stock market inside the US over the last 80-100 years or so. And he just mailed me the book, so I'm going to read it here in a little bit. But he said he and I have talked a lot about financial independence, and he's the one that actually introduced me to the financial independence retire early, or the FIRE community, where I started devouring a lot of personal finance blogs and podcasts and whatnot. And so that it was those initial conversations that set me down the path of I need to get my finances in order, and I want to set myself up and my family up for success so that someday we have a large enough nest egg invested that we can withdraw from it at roughly 4% over the course of our lifetime and not have to worry about money after that, right? And he was talking about how one of the premises of the book is that because of population growth in the United States, there's been just a tremendous influx of ideas and innovation and growth, economic growth, and that as population growth in the United States dwindles over time, if population estimates are accurate, then we will likely see a decrease in growth in the U.S. Economy over time and in the stock market and whatnot. And so he was saying, it's interesting with all of these FIRE bloggers, FIRE podcasters, et cetera, who are, planning on retiring early and withdrawing from their nest egg for the rest of their life, just kind of living as digital nomads or just, moving to other parts of the world, et cetera, what that might do to their calculations. And it was really interesting. We started a conversation about it, but it made me realize that my wife and I have talked about financial independence for a long time and how we need, X number of dollars. This is actually how much we would need invested in order to meet just like our basic expenses over what we imagine they would be for the course of our lifetime. That's not a very big number. You only need, for example, if you could live off of $40,000 a year for the rest of your life, adjusted for inflation, then you'd only need about $1 million invested in the market. Broad-based index funds, et cetera. And, you're probably going to get about an 8% return, blah, blah, blah. It's going to grow. It's going to outpace its your withdrawals, et cetera. But thinking about that, I was like, I've actually become very disenchanted with the idea of retiring early in its traditional sense because I don't ever really want to retire. I don't ever really want to stop. I think we've talked about it, just how when people retire, there's like if you don't have anything to keep doing after you've formally retired from whatever your corporate job was, well, your health's going to dwindle. Like studies show that your health dwindles quite quickly, and that it's people who are continuing to do things, exercising the brain and their bodies and their thinking, like they are the ones that will continue to live, you know, long and happy lives. And dude, I don't know if I'll ever be able to stop building, stop creating, stop doing things. Like I can't sit still. I can't, there's so many things that I want to do with my life that I don't know if I'll ever get to a point where I'm like, I'm done. I want to go sit Mai Tais on the beach and just chill for the next forever. Like, no, like, because I feel like that's in some senses, you're like wasting the gift that God has, all the gifts that God has given you to go out and to produce and to create and to give of your life and of your energy to the people around you, to, like you said, to make them feel certain ways, to make them feel uplifted and motivated, inspired to go and do and build so we can all grow together. We can all rise together. You know, like I don't think I could ever stop.
Dude, sitting on a beach is not sustainable. Like there's a reason, like we went to the Dominican Republic and we're in paradise, right? Like they give you all the food you want, all the piña coladas, all the mojitos. They make your bed for you. They do that for you. But I can't do that for more than a week without feeling like, man, I want to go create. I want to go back to, you know, building what I was making back home. And so little breaks are good, but it's not, they weren't meant to be forever. Right. That's why I think after I do reach that, like I'll always be doing something, like whether it's a mission with my wife,
right?
Whether it's building businesses like down the road,
right.
It's fun to create. It's fun to build. And when I door knock, dude, I talk to guys that are retired all the time in the 55 and up communities, because I am super good at selling to old people. but I'm like, hey, how's retirement? And they're like, it's okay. It's like they're in a blue, they're very blue. They're sad because they're no longer anxiously engaged in a good cause. Like, it's hard. And so I think it's always good to have a long-term mission for your life. Right. And if that means going from knocking doors to doing more speaking events or, you know, serving in missions, like doing something, we are way happier when we are doing and being and becoming. I think the best word is becoming something instead of just being stagnant.
Right. And for example, being a mission leader. So for those who aren't aware, when you are a married couple and kind of at the right point in your life and it makes sense for you, you can be called to go and serve as the leaders of a missionary or leaders of a mission. With, you know, somewhere between like 100 and 200 missionaries, you know, young missionaries, you know, 18 to like 27 or whatever. And you're kind of responsible for their well-being, physical, temporal, as well as their spiritual well-being, and helping organize them around this good cause and helping them learn the skills that they need to talk to people and to teach people about Jesus Christ. And those mission leaders, they're not paid to do it. In the same way that missionaries are not paid to go be missionaries. Like, in fact, almost all of the callings that we have inside of our church are voluntary, that you just freely give of your time and energy and talents to that thing. And so now we talk about like being a missionary, you're going to go live in another country or another part of the United States. Like, you actually have to pay to go and do that. You pay the church a certain amount of money, and then they take care of all the lodging and the you know, monthly stipends for your food and all of that. They take care of all of that, visas, passports, et cetera. They take care of all of it for you. And then you go and you can just dedicate your whole time to the service. And for mission leaders, it's exactly the same. You pay your way to go and do this thing. And so if you're going to be called to be mission leaders for 3 years, which is usually the length of the calling, that's 3 years of you not having your normal income, of you not going to work every day. And you're not like, you're not a mission leader, but then you're like taking calls and meetings and stuff on the side, like part-time, like, no, like you are dedicated 100% to being this mission leader. And so, and you can be called to this well before your, you know, traditional 65-year-old retirement date. Like, you can be called to this when you're in your 30s. Like, I mean, you can be called to this whenever it makes sense in the organization of the church. And so like my wife and I want to be, in a place where we could accept that calling as soon as possible. Like that as soon as we are capable of it, then we want God to know that he can call us and that we are ready, to go today. Not, can you give me 2 more years? Give me 6 more years. Like, can you just wait until the kids are out of the house? Like, There are mission leaders who take their kids with them, like, because they're, you know, their kids are still in school. And so they up and they move their whole family. And, you know, for my wife and I, we also don't, for the most part, we don't want the language, or we don't want there to be much of a language barrier in that calling as well. Like, the more languages that we can speak, the greater utility that we will have, you know, in the Lord's service around the world. The more people we can talk to, the more people we can connect with. And so we've built that into our family. And so we want the finances to be there, the language to be there. Like, we just, and we want the will, the desire, the willingness to go and to do all of those things. And so that's part of what all of this is in service of.
And it's cool. And I think it's cool that you're teaching your daughter all these languages, man. I got Georgia. That's one of my goals for the year is teaching Georgia Spanish. And okay. So did I tell you, she's like,
no, dude,
if she wants something and I tell her no, in English, like, she asked me in English, I tell her no, she'll be like, daddy, please, mas, por favor. And like, she'll just start rattling off Spanish. Please, mas, por favor, is one thing that she does. But I've taught her, yo quiero mas, por favor. Like, if she ever wants anything and she really wants it, I'm like, yo. And she goes, yo quiero smoothie, por favor. So there's that. She goes, ayúdame. But she goes, por favor, ayúdame. So it's ayúdame. But yeah, she's picked up some Spanish, like gracias, de nada. The other day, she told someone gave her something, and she said gracias. And then she looked around at her friends, and no one said de nada. And she goes, de nada. And then she said it. She like filled it in.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's been a goal of mine for the year to teach her phrases. Like, she knows bombilla, she knows nariz, boca, besos. Like, that's how it starts. But right. It's like, now that she has a foundation with English, I've been able to branch out and start teaching her, like, this is what this means. It's better. I feel like it's been better to teach her with a foundation of English to Spanish, because there's something to kind of build off of.
Right.
But you're probably the expert on this. You know a lot of languages.
Just because we've been working on it since she was born does not make us experts. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Dude, super funny though. She's actually, we've been reading and praying with her in multiple languages since she was a baby. She really only speaks in English, but her speech has actually been, we imagine it's been a little bit delayed because of the German that we've been speaking to her since she was a baby. But now she's picking up things left and right. Like, it's coming really quickly now, but she doesn't really say too much in German. It's mostly in English with an occasional like vocab word in German. But she's recently started asking for us to sing and to pray in a specific language. So she, for some reason, loves the happy birthday song in Portuguese. So she will ask me to sing that to her in Portuguese. And then lately she's been asking us to sing, the Barney song, I Love You, because we sing it in English and then we sing it in Spanish because my parents had taught us how to sing it in Spanish when we were little. And it's so funny because there's a part in the Spanish verse where it says, dime que me quieres tú a mí. And we get to that part, and like along the way, she's like, she really only repeats kind of the last word, but she like knows what it is. Like when it starts with te amo, me amas, and she'll say like mas, you know, like she kind of just gets that last word in. But then we get to the part where it's dime que me quieres, tú a mí, and she just goes like right at that part, like she knew when it was, and just cannot say any other words. But dude, we, my wife and I, are just busting up laughing, dude. Languages are fun. Languages, I think they're really important, and people underestimate just how much children can learn. And it, just because, you know, for someone else out there, like, just because you didn't start teaching your child another language when they were born does not mean they're not going to get it. Like, in all of the academic literature out there on second language acquisition, really any time before the age of 19, and like, you can develop a native level, not just levels of fluency, but of pronunciation, like being able to lose your accent. Like lots of studies have been done that shown that if someone started learning a language before they were 19, there was a dramatic difference in their ability to pronunciate words like a native than compared to after that. But if there's any sort of foundation prior to that, like it extends your ability to learn languages with fantastic pronunciation and fluency, like well after that. Like if you start learning language as a child and maybe you'd call yourself like half decent at another language. Well, even if you're 25 or 30, like your ability to learn another language is still significantly better than those who have never tried learning a second language. You can definitely do it, dude. I'm so excited that George is freaking saying all these other things.
Well, all of our friends are Latinos out there in Georgia. So like, I'm like, Kaya, literally all your girlfriends speak Spanish. You're the only gringa. Like, you need to learn Spanish. So she'll learn it. But as I teach Georgia, it was when I was in the DR, there were some Chileans that I ran into, and I started speaking full blown Chileno with them, and they're like, what's going on? Like, white dude, no, like, this doesn't make any sense. Right. But it was fun, man. So, but dude, I think it's cool. So, I guess we'll come to a close today. Yeah. And two invites we have for you are consider joining us for the burpees every day, and we'll add you into our Instagram. Follow our Instagram because we're posting reels on there. Please share the reels so we can get, you know, more people listening to this. But our Instagram page is literally just called risingtribe.podcast. So if you can follow us and share, that will help us out a lot to kind of get the word out. And that's what we have for you guys. We'll have another guest speaker next month. Is there anything you want to add, Jared?
I'll go ahead and I'll put both of our Instagram handles and the podcast handle in the description for this episode. Be sure to leave a rating and a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. It'd really help us out. If you're psycho and you want to do 50,000 burpees before the end of the year, shoot us a message, dude. This is going to be freaking awesome. I don't think anyone else will get to go to Greece with us, but it'll still be awesome anyway. But that's it, dude. Thank you so much. I'm glad we were able to get this going. Hopefully I can figure out a solution for my dead computer. And hopefully all the recording goes through just fine. But thanks to everybody for being so flexible with all of our technical difficulties that that have shown up, dude. I'm convinced Satan doesn't want us to have this podcast out, and so he's working real hard to make sure it doesn't happen. So
that's a good thing.
Screw you, Satan. We got this. All right, brother. Love you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Love you, brother. Bye.